Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business and nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have a great show in store for you today. So hello to everyone tuning in to Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap. We talk about Game Chain. That's right, the HBO special. We also want to know, what would a McCain-Palin presidency look like? By the way, does the South represent real America? We also look at Al Sharpton's march, the GOP race, and in our sports segment, we talk about Peyton Manning's exit. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. And out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bill. We want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Okay, before we get started, there's a report in the Huffington Post that talks about the White House expressed its concern over a reported shooting of Afghan civilians by U.S. servicemen. And this, of course, is sad news, and which is likely to inflame tensions between the two countries and could incite violent reprisals. We are deeply concerned by initial reports of this incident and are monitoring the situation closely, said the White House National Security Council spokesman. Now, only one U.S. soldier appears to have been involved, but there are some reports that say there was three or more, and there were drinking and some other stories out there. So just take a note of that. But the report in the Huffington Post said it only appears to have been one involved in the Sunday shooting of Afghan civilians, a U.S. official said. The latest incident that is sure to strain U.S.-Afghan relations and inflame public opinion in Afghanistan. And the Afghan Defense Ministry said that Western forces killed 15 civilians in a shooting spree in southern Kandahar province. A senior U.S. defense official said Defense Secretary Leon Panetta was deeply saddened to hear last night of this incident and is closely monitoring reports out of Afghanistan. Senior Republican and Democratic senators called the situation tragic, but said it should not change U.S. policy in Afghanistan. Now, of course, I'm concerned because as a soldier myself and fighting over in the Gulf War some years ago, I understand the nature or the impact these incidents can have on U.S. forces, even the ones that are not so much in the combat zone. And when these things happen, of course, it doesn't come without some repercussions. So, you know, watch the news over the next several days to see what comes out of this, especially when we're talking about 15 civilians and what it turns out to be something, especially if the reports are true about the soldiers being intoxicated or under the influence of some sort. And for these to be non-combat related issues, it would be interesting to see if there is any retaliation, even in the non-combat zone. So just keep your eyes open on this. So I want to talk a little bit about Game Change. I don't know if you saw the HBO special or not. Of course, Jimmy and I watched it with bated breath, if you will. And we looked at and analyzed it, checked it out in up and down in several different ways. But if you haven't heard, there was a lot of buzz this past week about the HBO film Game Change, starring Julianne Moore, Woody Harrelson, and Ed Harris. The movie followed John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign from his selection of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as his running mate to their ultimate defeat in the general election. Now, Harrison portrays Steve Smith, McCain's senior campaign strategist. Now, this, of course, was based on the book Game Change by Mark Halperin and John Hyman. I found the movie to be quite interesting, and we're going to explore it in great detail. However, I would be remiss if I didn't include you, the listeners, all over the world in this conversation. I want to know what was your overall perception of the movie. What did you think about John McCain? Did it cause you to see Sarah Palin differently after the movie? If so, how? If they were elected, what do you think a McCain-Palin presidency would have looked like? The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, 323-580-5712. I would like you to weigh in on this one. It's very imperative that I get you and your opinion about this issue because I do have something to say. Next up, of course, is Al Sharpton. He's in Alabama. He was in Alabama. Now, Reverend Al Sharpton led a march in Montgomery on Friday in a bid to highlight the assault on voting and immigration rights. Now, Sharpton has had 5 days of marches commemorating the anniversary of the 1965 Civil Rights March from Selma to Montgomery, which were met with violent response from police and members of the Alabama National Guard on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. NAN, National Action Network, of course, and other civil rights and civil liberties groups have strong objections to the draconian anti-immigration law passed in Alabama last year, as well as the voter ID laws, or should I say voter suppression laws, that have been passed in over 70% of the United States, which could potentially disenfranchise up to 5 million minority and young voters. Now, although Republicans claim voter ID laws are necessary to prevent voter fraud, opponents of the laws, and including myself, point out that there has been almost no voter fraud prosecuted in the United States. So what do you think about this? Now, we have covered this extensively over the past year. Now that it's getting closer to election time, both sides of the issues are digging in their heels. Which side are you on? Do you think that having an ID is essential to the integrity of the electoral process? Or do you think something else is going on here? 323 580-5712. 323-580-5712. What is your opinion? This is very critical to our democracy. Are you engaged in the process, or are you going to sit back and watch? That is the question. It's time for a quick break, but when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and hear from you. Now, be sure to check out our blog at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE, D as in Delta, E as in Echo. TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You can also Google current events with Patrick Cook. Now, this is where you will find a unique perspective and stimulating commentary on the current events. I definitely invite you to check that out. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, AskGema. And AskGema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Bloomfield.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TAILORMADE101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we are going to open up the phone lines. But before we do that, I want to bring on the Chief Operating Officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting, of course, the Executive Producer of Current Events. I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Now, if you're just joining us, we're talking about Game Change. Now, Game Change, of course, is the HBO film starring Julianne Moore, Woody Harrelson, and Ed Harris. And the movie followed John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign, from his selection of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin and his running mate to the ultimate defeat by President Barack Obama. And I wanted to know, of course, what did you think about the movie? So, Jima, let me pose that question first. What do you think about the movie?
I thought it was a pretty accurate depiction of the campaign. Having remember seeing it live and in person. It showed Sarah Palin to me as being a little bossy and temperamental, a bully in some instances, manipulative in some instances. And then it also showed her realizing she was way out of her league, but of course, you know, she wasn't going to admit to anything. So, but I thought it was really good. I thought everybody that played their part played them well. And, you know, I didn't realize John McCain was such a potty mouth, though. My goodness. So that was a piece that I hadn't even heard anybody mention, so I didn't realize he was such a potty mouth. But I thought it was good.
So that begs the question, what do you think about John McCain, other than the fact that he had a potty mouth?
Well, I think they did a piss-poor job in getting her ready. In making sure she was ready. By that I mean that she was the right one to pick for that position, because to me, I think he made a joke out of the vice presidency by putting someone on the ticket that, it wasn't the fact that she didn't have any experience. In fact, she didn't know anything. She wasn't well versed in national and global affairs. And when you're the president and vice president of the United States of America, you are looked to all around the world for knowledge, for what you know, for how you can compromise and collaborate with other places. And she didn't have enough in her to be able to do that. So it was I don't even know how they thought she was okay.
Okay, so two things. One, you talked about getting her ready. Now, when I looked at the movie, I thought there certainly was an effort to try to get her ready. But you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make them drink. She, in my opinion, seemed to have refused the opportunities that they outlined for her to get ready. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't disagree with you. But my hesitation is that she should have never been there anyway. That's why I'm like, I don't know what they could have done to get her ready, because she never should have been there.
But it looked to me that she should have been ready.
I mean, if they were serious about her as a candidate for the future, mm-hmm. then they would have spent the last 4 years getting her ready to be running right now.
But I mean,
he was in no shape, form, or fashion, huh?
He wasn't looking for, he wasn't really contemplating running, I don't think, for the last 4 years. I think once he got in the race and knew he could win, because all the other Republican candidates were falling off, were shooting themselves in the foot in some way, then he kind of said, I can win this thing. So he had to get someone he thought that would kind of take him over the edge. And it looked like on the surface that Sarah Palin was the right choice. Initially, she was pretty. She was a head of state. She had fought some hard battles with the oil companies. So on the surface, she looked like a good potential candidate.
No, she did not.
And why not?
I'm not, because if you're running for the highest office of the land, you can't settle for the surface. I don't care what she looked like on the surface. I don't care if she was attractive. I don't care if in the back of their mind, subconsciously, they were trying to go after the quote-unquote women vote that they thought was going to be let down because Hillary didn't win on the Democratic side. So at the end of the day, they had some sort of, you know, ego strategy that they thought people was just going to let her slide by. But you cannot stand – I mean, you can't say you read all of them when you're in an interview with Katie Couric, who was the softest of, you know, all – interviewers, and even with Charlie Gibson, none of those interviews that she gave where she bombed were they gotcha questions. They were just legitimate questions for a country that's trying to get to know the person that's going to be that close to the office of the presidency. We need to know you know what you're talking about.
Okay,
so I don't really, you know. So they failed. I mean, they know they did. And so yeah, go ahead.
So I want to ask the question. You know, just, by as an observer of the movie, what did you think about Sarah before the movie, and what did you think about Sarah after the movie? In other words, did you see her differently, or is your perception, was your perception changed by the movie?
Yeah, excuse me. It was changed because I see her now as a bully and as a high-level manipulator because of how she tried to manipulate them and them thinking that like they was crazy. And they knew what they knew their stuff, and she's making it out like, oh, you're just trying to make me be somebody that I'm not. No, we're trying to make you be vice presidential. You know, that's what they were trying to do. And she didn't want to do it. She wanted to find out what the people in Alaska thought. And just like he said, there's no local media. You are running for the national office. It really doesn't care what Alaska thinks because we need to know what everybody else thinks. You know, she just kept pressing and pushing. So, you know, something that I didn't know about her was that she was a bully because she always tried to push people and go around people, and she tried to manipulate, as in the night of the concession when she wanted to get out there and give a speech. And, you know, the second person on the ticket don't have nothing to say. You know, what was she thinking? I mean, and it became about her. And even that night at the end when John McCain gets through talking, they talking about Sarah. So she completely overtook his campaign. I don't, you know, we can call it what we want to call it, but she completely overtook that campaign, and she and he's been trying to redeem his name ever since.
You know, what was interesting, I just couldn't for the life of me, taking a deeper look at just the movie, because we talked about our opinions of the movie. Now, looking at the movie, I couldn't understand why she was so preoccupied with Alaska when she was running a national campaign. It seems to me that, I mean, it would suggest to me that she had already conceded that she was going to lose and wanted to make sure she was intact to go back to Alaska with her ratings in place or with her perception in place. So it seemed to me that, you know, after it was all said and done, her focus was on Alaska as opposed to being running for the national scene. What do you think about that?
Well, I really, in all honesty, don't think she realized what it meant to be vice president and what the role of the vice president is. And because of that, she was ill-prepared to think past what she knew. It's something like I tell my staff when they were going up for a promotion or for a job. When you go into that interview and you go in for that test, and you're sitting before that panel, you answer the questions from the position of where you're trying to go, not from the position of what your current job title is. Because I don't want to know what you're doing now. I want to know if you already see yourself in that position, and everything you're saying to me, you're responding that way. Sarah Palin wanted to respond as governor of Alaska. She didn't want to respond as vice president of the United States of America. And therein is why it was difficult for her to grasp what those tools were going to be for her to be able to speak in terms of vice president and not in terms of governor of Alaska. And at the end of the day, she quit being governor of Alaska. Go figure.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today we're talking about Game Change, the HBO film starring Julianne Moore, Woody Harrelson, and Ed Harris. And, of course, the movie followed John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign from his selection of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin to their ultimate defeat by President Barack Obama. And, of course, joining me today is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Jima Hill Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk, 2 to listen. Let's go to our phone lines now. We have a caller on the line from last 4, 3732. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
This is Mr. Motivated in Dallas.
Mr. Motivator, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm just enjoying the show. You guys always have such a great show, and the way look at the people that you're discussing is very, very informative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Motivate. We appreciate that. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, I have a question. Lately, I've been noticing a lot of people coming in, you know, talking about their background and what they've accomplished, and they're going to people's Facebook pages and different things on the internet, but they're not mentioning anything about the actual party that they represent. All they're saying is they're a politician. So could you give us some ideas on how do we cut through the chase when we got people that are trying to get us to hit the like button and get them a little extra notice out there?
All right. Thank you for that question. Jimmy, you want to field that question or do you want me to take it?
You take it, sir.
Well, I would say, Mr. Motivated, a couple of things. There's what they call a Democratic platform. There's a Republican platform. And then, of course, there's an independent, which normally select a view based on the current situation or something that's really localized to what they're dealing with, which means they can go either way, Republican or Democratic. And in a lot of cases, you can ask some basic fundamental questions that will get you in line or to kind of clue you in to which side of the fence they're on. For example, the pro-life, pro-choice issue will kind of clue you in right away by asking that question to see what side of the fence they're on. If you talk about big government, if you hear the language of big government, that would also clue you in. If you talk about taking away education, I mean, there's a lot of different language that people use, and you start hearing real America and you start hearing that type of language, that kind of clues you in to which party they are. And then typically, in my opinion and through my experience, when I hear that type of language of middle America, when I hear the type of language of going to, you know, big government and things of that nature, I normally see that being more of a Republican interest. And when I see things that are more progressive in nature, more evolution in nature, more taking the country forward, unfortunately, it has been associated with the fortunately, it has been associated with the Democratic Party. And so another example, and most recently, the issues with women's rights, right? It's unfortunate that a lot of Republicans has been cluing in on taking those rights back from women. And when you look at the Democratic language or their policies, suggestions or things of that nature, it has been more on the Democratic side. So I would encourage you, Mr. Motivator, to look at the language that they're using. And even though they don't put down whether they're Republican or a Democrat or an independent, if you look at their views in a lot of cases, it will clue you in. Thank you for that question. Now, moving back to the game change issue, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about Jima, about the fact that the portrayal of her nervous breakdown in the movie. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, I would encourage you to go out and check it out. It was an interesting portrayal of Sarah Palin. It was an interesting portrayal of Senator McCain. But it did kind of indicate that there was a breakdown that she had. And Jimin, I think you put it best by saying that she was not prepared for the job, or she was thinking Alaska politics. A localized politics as opposed to national politics. So it became too much on her. Now, I must say that even anybody, I don't care how prepared they were, if they just had a baby, if their son was in Iraq, if they was running for national office, if they were taken from their family, it would cause cause a lot of pressure to be on that person. So I can see how she potentially went through a breakdown period because it was a bit much. And so Jima, given all of those things around her that she was going through, do you think that had an impact on the fact that she was portrayed to have a breakdown?
Well, No, I mean, I think she had a breakdown because she realized she was not prepared for what she thought she was prepared for. She had a breakdown, or what appeared to be one, because she knew she was in over her head, but because of her personality, and we all know people like that, you know, sometimes we dig our feet in as opposed to digging ourselves out and trying to get some help. And she wouldn't take the help that was coming to her. She wanted to do it her way. She wanted to be who she was. And maybe how they got her to accept the role is because they said they liked how she was. And so because they didn't really vet her in the beginning, she may have thought she was all, you know, everything was good. So, I mean, you know, she didn't even know what the Federal Reserves was. Really? Seriously? And you're running for her. I mean, you know, it was just so many things like that. That, you know, I don't know if I remember that part, you know, as the campaign was unfolding, but there was enough data, information presented during the course of that campaign that you take away, and you know, the language and the gotcha and the you betchas, you know, what was left there. And so I just think she wasn't going to, you know, say she couldn't do it because that's just not her personality. And you got to commend her for that. I mean, she stuck it in and took all the hits, you know, and took all the darts that came her way, some fairly, some that wasn't so fair. But, you know, she took them. And for that, you got to go on and give her props because she stood strong.
You know, again, going back to the nervous breakdown situation when she pretty much just lost it, you know, as it portrayed in the movie. After that particular time, when she came back, she was a different person. She was more aggressive, she was more assertive, and it looks like she had an agenda after that. So it looks like to me, you know, after her, you know, realizing that, look, this is, I'm in way over my head, right? I needed at some point to take advantage of this now. And I say that because of her comment she made about the fact that these people are here to see me, not John McCain. And so that was shortly after she went through that breakdown period and she began to reassert herself, as you said, and now she was trying to move forward with an agenda. Did you see that? And if so, what did you think her agenda was?
Well, I think overall, for the most part, she was she got intoxicated with power. She got intoxicated with the crowds. She got intoxicated with the adoration that was coming towards her from all kinds of people. I think, you know, in her heart of hearts, you know, I don't think she is as malicious as she ended up being. I think she became that way. I really think underneath all of her armor, she does care about people. I really do believe that. But I also think that because she wasn't, you know, she didn't spend her life growing up saying one day I'm going to run for vice president. And so everything she did was preparing for that. I think she was just not prepared. And so when the break happened, and we all break in different ways. Some of us break and we hide. Some of us break and, like I say, we dig our heels in even further and we come out swinging. And she came out with the intoxication of power, saying these people are here to see me. I'm the one they coming to see. You know, they're not really coming to see you. I'm making more money for this campaign than you've ever seen. And so she became. She thought she was running for president. I think she thought she was more important than John McCain. And that's where she made her, you know, her strategic error, was that she thought she was more important than John McCain and that she thought she could beat President, you know, then Senator Obama and Senator Biden. She thought she could beat them. There's no way she could beat them, period.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If they were going to win, it was going to take the two of them. But somewhere along the line, she thought she could do it by herself.
You know, so another thing that I thought that was really odd in the movie was that John McCain seemed to be really disconnected from her. Now, I don't know how intentional that was, but there was a lot of interference by her handlers as opposed to being connected with John McCain. So it didn't seem to me that they were nowhere through the movie or nowhere through the cycle that they were on one accord. And so, you know, I just don't understand how he could allow her to kind of go rogue and not be so involved or connected with her and just let the handlers handle that. What did you think about that?
Well, I think that happens a lot of times. Excuse me. Excuse me. When we people in the position, and then there's other people that are supposed to be taking care of all these little things. And so I think John McCain trusted his campaign staff in its totality to vet her, to get her ready, to do all the things, you know, to cater to her, to do all the things that they needed to do to make sure that they had a chance to win the election. And so there were some things he just didn't want to know. I mean, when he came, I think his name is Steve Schmidt, when he went to him and said, you know, and then there was a time when he didn't even go to John McCain and tell him everything that was happening, because he probably already knew, this is something I'm supposed to handle. I shouldn't have to take this to him. This is what I'm supposed to do. And so a lot of times John McCain probably didn't know the half of what was really happening.
I know,
they
yeah.
Didn't tell
I know.
Him.
Yep.
You know, they didn't tell him. And then when they finally did tell him, he was like, well, we're in it now, basically, so y'all need to figure out what we're going to do.
Right.
And kind of, you know, stepped away from it. But at the end of the day, it was John McCain's name on the top of that ticket. You mm-hmm. were the nominee for president, and you chose her to be your running mate. So at the end of the day, you know, although the other people may have suggested her and made all these whatever, he said okay. So he's ultimately accountable and responsible for the fallout.
Yeah, you know, and so when you juxtapose the McCain campaign against the Obama's campaign, clearly the perception of the Obama's campaign that everything was in order. He was involved in the process. They had one message. Didn't seem like a lot of chaos. And, it seemed like, you know, they were very informed on the issues. But when you look at the McCain side, it looks like it was just straight chaotic. And especially as portrayed in the movie, it seems like when every time she was in front of a camera, everybody was on pins and needles because they didn't know what was going to come out of her mouth. I mean, it was like they was all waiting, like, oh, please, crossing their fingers, if you will, with that level of intensity to see what she was going to say. And so that was kind of an indication to me that it was really out of control.
Yeah, you know, there were times in which I was like, if this really happened, wow, we were on the brink of some major
yeah.
disaster.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that begs the question about what would a McCain-Palin presidency look like? You know, President Obama is saying this now, and you hear a lot of other commentators and pundits and news people say this as well, is that the situation we were in was a lot worse than they have initially perceived or projected.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you imagine having those two in office going through a catastrophic situation that we were in? What do you think it would look like today?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know how they would have handled the financial crisis that, you know, we're learning more and more each day was a lot worse than what any of us ever even imagined. I don't know if we would have, you know, they say President Obama kept us from falling off the cliff, so to speak. I don't know if that presidency, McCain and Palin, would have kept us from falling off. We may have fallen on off. We may be in another war by now under that presidency. I'm sure they, you know, somewhere they would have found somebody to attack or something. We probably wouldn't have left Iraq. We'd probably still be there.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, there's just so many things, you know. But maybe the plus side of it is that maybe we would have kept control of the House. Because their presidency would have been so jacked up that we would have kept control, Democrats would have kept control of the House and the Senate, and so maybe, you know, we would have some different outcomes in some other areas.
Yeah, you know, what frightens me the most is the fact that John McCain today and yesterday and last week and last month and for the last several years, when he gets on the floor, he first thing comes out of his mouth, he want to fight. Let's go to war. Let's fight. Let's fight. Let's fight. And so, of course, there's a concern there about keeping our troops in conflict, right? There's always a concern about that. And then when you look at the fact, and I'm going to shift here, about all of the Republican legislation that has been passed over the last 3 or 4 years about voters' rights, how, you know, how much support they would have because of a Republican presidency. When you look at all of the, you know, when you look at the pipeline proposal and that, and the fact that they were trying to put in legislation without considering the environmental impacts thoroughly enough, you know, and that could also provide some potential issues in that particular area. So there's a lot that that concerns me, that would have concerned me about a Palin, about a McCain-Palin presidency. And so I'm so glad that we were able to get insight. And that's what the vetting process is all about. And so it makes me want to inform all the listeners about vetting these Republicans right now, right? Because we could potentially be in the same situation we were in 4 years ago with these same candidates we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you listen to the rhetoric, right, you listen to the things that they're talking about, they're not too far from Palin, especially after her breakdown period. When she came, I'm going to talk about the second half Palin as opposed to the first half Palin. And so now she looks a whole lot different, or should I say a whole lot like Rush Limbaugh and all of those other far right wing extremist type people. And that's what it looks like these GOP candidates look like today. What do you think?
I agree with that. And you know, but, you know, to counter what you were saying, had they gotten in, we wouldn't have had all of this voter rights legislation because there wouldn't have been a need to change anything. So we wouldn't even be talking about it because, you know, whatever was in place was working. So there wouldn't have been nothing to talk about. So they wouldn't have changed it. So it's only changed now, you know, in terms of what they're trying to do is because of who's in office right now. And then as you take a look at, all, as you stated, the candidates that we're faced with today and some of the rhetoric and some of the – just the tone and tenor of the rhetoric is at a scale – That's sometimes a little eerie. And then when you look at the fact that a report came out that we've had a 400-500% increase in the number of hate groups in America since President Obama has been in office, and that's scary to me. I don't know if anybody else is scared about that, you know. And you know, to all my Christians out there who, you know, would say, you're not supposed to be scared. God doesn't give you a spirit of fear. Yeah, but, you know, he also gives me some discernment. And we got that much of an increase in people that have formed together based purely on hate. You know, all it needs is just an imagined reason, and this country could go up in smoke. You know, and that's something that we need to be taking a look at as well. And I don't think we're paying close enough attention to the rhetoric because I think we think it's just rhetoric. And we're not paying close enough attention to what has been done. You look at a party that when they ran in 2010 in the midterm elections, they talked about the economy, they talked about jobs, and yet in every state legislation that has been, you know, that was taken over by Republicans, everything has been around voting. It's been around women's health. It's been around abortion. There hasn't been one jobs bill come forth, not on a state level and not on a federal level, but yet that's what they ran on. And here we sit 2 years later after they won, and we're no closer to figuring out, you know, I mean, the president is doing his thing. He's plowing ahead and moving. But when you look at, you know, how they were able, the rhetoric is how they were able to go in some places and take over. And so if we're not careful and if we sit back and not take things seriously, we're going to find ourselves at a serious disadvantage.
You know, I agree with you there. And it's time for a quick break. But when we return, we're gonna revisit that issue you just brought up about the language that you're talking about. In fact, I'm going to play a tape. I'm going to play a recording of what people consider to be real America. We're going to hear from some people down in Mississippi, and they were. It was an interview on Real Time with Bill Maher, and he went out. He sent out one of his. He sent out one of his producers, Pelosi, to go out and talk to people in Mississippi, in what they call Real America. We're going to play that for you, and I want you to be. I want you to be. I want you to clue into the language and the rhetoric used here. And so, you know, stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick. We're going to play it when we return. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Jima Hill Cook. Now, Jima, I want to piggyback off of something you said, and of course, it is purely associated with the rhetoric or the language that's being used across the country. I'm going to play what Bill Maher did on his show over the weekend, and I really want people to pay close attention to this. Now, it's a little long, about 2 minutes, so take, you know, get you something to drink on real quick and sit down and take a listen. And then, Jim, we're going to get you to respond.
Hey, Bill, I'm here in Mississippi, the poorest state in America, which is also the most conservative state in our union. So why is Mississippi so conservative?
Well, in the heart of the Bible Belt, we believe in family. We believe in Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Whoever gets elected needs to be family-orientated.
God should come into his mind and everything that he does.
You never liked the president, did you?
Never. And never will.
Why not?
One thing is named Obama.
This is America. Our president should be American, not Muslim.
I don't even like it. When I see him on TV, I turn it off. I don't like it.
Is it because it's wrong?
No, it's not because he's black, because he's a half-breed. He's black, too, but he's a half-breed.
I guess I'm a little prejudiced.
Are you? You don't like black people?
Not much.
Why not?
Just don't.
What is this? Where are we?
We're in the state of Mississippi. I don't care for the government. They don't show me anything.
Did you get food stamps?
Yeah, but I think I deserve food stamps. I have no unemployment.
I hate Obamacare. I think it's retarded and pointless.
But a lot of people in Mississippi need health care.
Yeah. Back when I was growing up and when my parents were growing up and my grandparents were growing up, we didn't have all that and people still made it. And back then, people pulled their own weight. They didn't sit around waiting for everyone else to take care of them.
So you don't care about the economy?
No. Just take care of yourself. You put the guy back in the saddle, it'll all be okay.
So something's not working here.
That's
voting
right.
Voting Republican hasn't worked for you.
But it could.
But it hasn't.
It hasn't, but it could.
Why is the poorest state the most conservative state?
We would rather go broke and die hungry than to give up our moral beliefs.
I feel like that voting God and voting faith is more important to me than voting for free money or voting for a handout.
I'm going
to
stand up for what I believe in, even if I go broke doing it.
We're not going to be pushed over. We lost the war. That's true. But we're not going to be pushed around. We're not going to back down from what we believe. And like the tag on the front of my truck says, the South will rise again.
Okay. Well,
okay. So as you can see, seem to suggest that they vote against their interests because they're not concerned about, you know, what can really help them or lift them up out of their situation. And B, their language or their rhetoric seemed to me to be no different than the Taliban. And I say that because the Taliban always want to inject their religion inside of what they're doing, and so and it causes them to behave in a certain manner or a certain fashion. And it sounds like to me that these people are using that same language, you know, not concerned about really what can help them, but instead, you know, using their religion as a wedge issue, and not really following any type of Christian principles. So, Jima, I can understand why a person can be scared when they hear Taliban type language used, especially as it moves or as the number of people increase in this whole hate crimes. So you say what?
Excuse me. Well, I say it's unfortunate that people in 2012 are going to continue to vote against their own best interest. I don't think people should expect a handout, but I think if I'm down and out and I've done all I was supposed to do and, you know, the plant closed on me anyway, I've been there as long as I could. I've maintained a job. I've taken care of my family. You know, in those times, you know, there should be somebody there to help me out. There should be somebody there to help me out. The problem is that our society of Christians and evangelicals and whatever other term we want to use, we want to portray that our religion is superior over all others. So although we have some of the same rhetoric coming out of some, as you mentioned, that comes out of the Taliban, for some reason it's supposed to sound different because it's coming from white Christian people.
Right, right, right.
You know, it's supposed to have a different ring to it or whatever, or you know, and not just white, but whoever is saying it, you know, it's supposed to sound different or supposed to mean something different. And at the end of the day, it doesn't. You know, it carries some of the same angst and targeted racism that they claim comes from, you know, another group. And so we have to be real careful with that. And it's unfortunate that, you know, she went to Mississippi, and for those that didn't see it, you know, all those people that she spoke to were white Americans and really believe in what they believe in, and that's fine, but, you know, this is where we are now. We have to, you know, make the adjustments, or, you know, you will get left behind, and some of them have been left behind.
I just don't understand how they can continue to tout God, continue to talk about religion, and then in the same breath talk about not having tolerance for black people, not having tolerance for what he said in the interview, half breed, you know. And so that confuses me a lot with these Christian real Americans in the South. You know, so I don't understand how they can be Christians and then not want to care for their brother in the same vein.
Well, you know, you go back to how this country was originally founded. I mean, we were, you know, not considered human, and so they really still believe that, right? I mean, they, you know, when they talk about the Constitution, they're not talking about any of the amendments. They talk about the Constitution
in its original form.
In its original form, and I think that's what we have to be reminded of. When they talk Constitution and they want to hold up the Constitution, I don't think they're talking about any of the amendments that were added to. They're simply talking about the Constitution. If they're going by just the Constitution, you are so not relevant in their world because you don't even exist. You're not even human. You are three-fourths of a man, period. You have no rights. You have no right to anything. I have a right to own you. I have a right to kill you at whim. I can enslave you when I want to. So, you know, that's what they believe because that's the part of the Constitution. That's it. And so, you know, we keep trying to make it, well, that's not what it says. Well, that is what it says. What the amendments were ratified to make things a little bit easier for us, you know, and to bring us into the fold because we were here. We wasn't going anywhere. So, you know,
right.
A world could not continue to exist where, you know, people would just continue to be treated subhuman, not in the great land of America, you know, home of the free and the brave and whatnot. So, but, I think that's the bottom line difference is that they really, just like they hold clutch to their guns and to their flags and to the Constitution.
You know, so that's why I said there's some merit to your comments about fear and about this increase in these hate crimes and these organizations or groups that's hating on people, if you will. And so that's why I continue to suggest that the language that they're using is really no different than the Taliban. And so we really must pay attention, close attention to this language and the fact that anytime you hear somebody say they'd rather go broke tend to deal with the situations, we really need to pay a close attention to that. And this is in the 21st century. This is 2012, mind you, that this language is being used and these people feel this way.
Right. Like just a couple of weeks ago, we're not even talking about last year. We're talking very recent that reporter was down in Mississippi and found and was talking with those people. So.
Right. So I want to shift now to Al Sharpton and the march he did in Montgomery on Friday. Now, he was highlighting the assaults on the voting and immigration rights. So my question, Jima, is, first of all, shouldn't people have an ID to vote?
No, we've never had to have an ID to vote. That's why you go and register and get your voter registration card. To go and vote. That's what you took.
But what's
with
wrong
your voter
with,
registration card.
But what's wrong with having an ID to show who you are when you get ready to cast your vote? Remember that this is the most important part of our democracy, the voting process. So why not have some kind of identification?
And you do. You have your voter registration card as your identification.
There's no picture on it.
Wait a minute. The issue isn't about having voter identification. The issue is having a picture ID. So there's two separate issues here. So it's not. I agree that you ought to be able to determine whether or not the person standing in front of you is who they say they are. They present you your card. You go down your voter registration list that you have, Mr. Election Person. You see the two match. You have them sign their name on both sides. And you keep them, you hand them the slip, and they go vote. Now, all
right.
All of a sudden, what used to be able to work in the event that I did not have my voter registration card, I could use my photo ID. And it didn't have to be a current, so it could have expired as long as my address was the same. Well, now that same photo ID that's now expired no longer works. So I could bring in my photo ID that was expired along with a light bill, gas bill, phone bill, some kind of bill that was attached to that very same address. Now that no longer works. So it's not as though things were not already in place for me to be able to verify who you say that you are. We were already doing that. The issue is there has been conversation put forth that during the last election, there was just astronomical amounts of voter fraud. And so voter fraud scares people. Oh, my goodness. There were people voting that shouldn't have been voting, and it was all those illegals that were out there voting, and that's how he got elected. Still refusing to accept the fact that this man was elected legitimately. That is what all of this comes down to, is still trying to paint him as being illegitimate, painting him to be not really elected because
the people
that voted were not supposed to vote.
Who are you talking about? Who is this person you're talking about?
What are you talking about?
You just said painting him. I don't know who you're talking
about. The president.
Or the United States, Barack Obama.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I need you to weigh in on this, callers. Listening audience, 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. Should you have a voter's ID to vote? Shouldn't you be able to show who you are to cast your ballot? 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. Jima, you had a comment. What was the comment?
You're asking the wrong question. The question isn't about a voter ID. The question is about a photo ID. That is the difference here, is that now you must have a photo ID. And then it's restrictions on what type of photo ID there can be. So now we went from being able to show you a state-issued photo ID that may have expired, but I was able to provide you additional documentation, to that not being okay, to now not only a photo ID and not just any old photo ID, because if I'm a student in college, that ID doesn't work anymore. Unless I'm in a state school, as if I'm in the state of Georgia and I'm at Georgia Tech or somewhere such as University of Georgia, then that particular school ID works. But if I'm at Spelman or if I'm at Morehouse or if I'm at Clark Atlanta, that student ID doesn't work. Now, what's up with that?
So you're saying HBCUs, historically black colleges and university IDs, are not allowed in this process?
In the state of Georgia.
Wow. That seems a little odd to me and strange that they would do something like that. But isn't it true that I should be able to walk up to a voting booth, present to you who I am in some form or fashion that allows you to see that the piece of identification that I have looks like me, smells like me, feels like me, so that I can be sure that there's no fraud taking place in the voter process?
Of course. No, no one is saying that we're advocating for voter fraud. But if that was your premise to want to change the rules, you were making a false premise, because there has not been widespread voter fraud, period. There has not been widespread voter fraud. What the results say from the commission is that it's like 0.000003%.
Wow. Yeah.
You have in the state of Alabama alone, where after 3 years of investigating, they come up with three cases of voter, and it wasn't even voter fraud, because it wasn't like the people were trying to vote and they wasn't who they were. But they had three cases after 3 years, and that is why, according to those congressmen that voted for it, that they felt like it was widespread voter fraud. So that's
the
language.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
widespread
voter
fraud.
I definitely agree with you. I definitely agree with you. Here's the problem that I have about the whole voter issue, voter suppression issue, is the fact that if they choose, and first of all, and I'm going to use Al Sharpton's word here, they have a solution looking for a problem as opposed to a problem looking for a solution. So I can agree with that component. And I also have a problem with the issue of making a person have an ID, especially if they're disabled, if they're blind, if they have in a situation where they're incapacitated and cannot go out and have a driver's license or don't need a gun ID, but they've already at 18 already proven that they have, you know, when they go down to register to vote, they have already proven that process before. They had an ID when they did that. Then they get a card that they carry with them, is renewed periodically. And so now they take that to the car. It is no longer valid. That's the problem that I have with this whole process, is that you go through the vetting process, if you will, when you register to vote. And so now I have a voter's card, and then all of a sudden now you change the rules when I go to the booth, and now I got to have that process and an ID. I think there's something wrong with that. I think there's something wrong when you have a homeless person that doesn't have an address that can't get an ID. I think there's something wrong with the fact that you have a disabled person that can't drive and don't have a need to go out and purchase a weapon, and he can't vote. So you're disenfranchising people. And in fact, I think they said 5 million potentially. I have a problem with that. So I definitely understand how this has an impact, but I just want to know, Jima, and please address this. Why, after all of these years, that they want to introduce this legislation in 2012?
And let me preface my answer by also stating that not only are they, you know, making it appear to be more difficult to get the voter ID card, because you have a lot of urban cities, and I keep going back to Georgia, where they closed a lot of the local DMV offices in the city. And so if I already didn't have a car and I have to now take the bus to get to where you are, now you're outside of the city, which means, you know, if you open Monday through Friday, probably. I doubt if they open on the weekends, but, you know, so you open Monday through Fridays, and I'm working maybe 2-3 jobs trying to just make ends meet. When am I going to have time to get on the bus to go outside of the city to get this ID that now I have to have? You know, that's one thing. And then the other thing is that some of the other things they're changing. In some states, they're changing Sunday voting because, you know, statistically it shows that a lot of African Americans, people of color, will go and vote on Sunday. A lot of churches would load up their people after church and take them to the polls. So now you're getting rid of Sunday voting. You're getting rid of early voting. You're closing the window for early voting that went from which primarily people of color, Democrats, tend to vote early during national elections. So you're closing down that window. So it's not just, you know, about the ID. You know, that's why we're saying it's voter suppression, because now you're hindering me from voting. Because if my boss is not going to give me off to go and vote, you know, when do I get to vote now that you cut off Sunday? You cut off the weekend. I mean, you know, so many other things are in that, and we're just talking about, we get caught up on the ID, but there's other parts of it, you know, state and, you know, in different states, that's going to be just as impactful as that. And so that's why we need to, you know, just make sure we're well informed on the whole issue. And I hear people say all the time, well, you need ID to get on the airplane. Well, you know, I'm not flying nowhere, so no, I don't.
Right.
And then, you know, when you look at the fact that during this primary season for the Republicans, during this GOP time, in their caucuses, and in a lot of their election nights, they have not had to show photo IDs. And, you know, so who's to say that all those people were supposed to be voting? You know, who's to say that the legitimacy of all the delegates that they have received is even accurate? Since we want to talk about voter fraud, and we want to say people are voting that's not supposed to vote.
Yeah, not to mention they're doing redistricting and they're cutting closing windows. So you're right. So the takeaway here, and that people should make sure that they're very aware of, because of what they try to do, is formulate the ID argument by saying it's the ID argument. Yeah, ID, 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 but it's really more involved than just the ID. they're cutting down the time for early voting. They're cutting out locations. They're making it harder for you to go. And the fact that you do need an ID, they're cutting down the opportunities for you to get those IDs. So there's a lot more going on here that people need to be aware of and not just listen to the argument of ID, because that's how they're framing their argument. They're framing the conversation, or they're setting things up by saying, you need an ID. Don't you need an ID to buy alcohol? Don't you need an ID to go out and fly a plane? Don't you need an ID, ID, ID? But when they're all of it, they're sticking these other pieces of legislation inside of this ID. And so, and then the redistricting thing too, cutting out pieces and piling on people so that, you know, so that your vote can really be strategically can be taken away from you. And there was just another day when the congressman went to the voting booth and couldn't vote, and he'd been doing it for years. Jimmy, want to talk about that?
Right. It was an ex-congressman down in Tennessee. He goes to show up to vote, and they said he wasn't on that roll, and he's been voting there for years. What should have happened is that the person there should have given him a provisional just in case he was able to vote, then his vote would have counted, but they failed to do that, and what come to find out, it was their error. They had purged him off of the voting roll because he had a home in two different counties. And so here's a man who was an elected official who was denied, you know. And so there would probably be more instances of that. And we've just got to be, you know, real careful and real aware, you know, of what it is that they're really trying to do. You have the head, you know, mouthpiece of the Republican Party and Karl Rove, who made no bones about stating if we just take away a certain percentage, I can't remember the percentage, of number of people that can vote in North Carolina, he says Obama would not have won. So ever since he made that statement, they have been strategically trying to make sure that that percentage of people would not have access to the polls. And so, you know, just I say it's not just about the ID. It's about all those other things that we've talked about, and we have to be vigilant. And when you call or when you're trying to, and don't let money be an option, because most of these places, if you don't ask, they're not going to tell you, but they can waive the fee. They're not going to tell you they can waive the fee. As a matter of fact, they've been instructed not to tell you that they can waive the fee. Now, you know, how crazy is that? So ask, can your fee be waived? And then they have to tell you yes. And then you can go on down there and get it without having to pay anything. Because it's not, you know, it's not like a voter ID card is free. It's not free. Some places it's as high as $20. And then you have to have a original birth certificate, and that can run a piece. And then if you're married, you have to make sure your marriage license matches and all this. And so that can run a pretty penny of trying to locate your marriage license. And it's not as though, you know, we've all worked with state agencies before. Some of them are not that timely, you know. And so that's why it's important that whatever pieces of documentation that you need, that you start trying to get it now, so that come November, or even as I state every week, come your primary seasons in your state, you have what you need to be able to vote. And as difficult as it is of a pill to swallow, this is the nature of the beast that we're dealing with right now. And unless something changes, we have still got to be prepared for the outcome. We cannot wait to That's see right. what comes out of the NAACP's lawsuit that they're going to present to the DOJ. We can't wait on that. We still have to get ready. And so yep. that's all, you know, when we talk about where we sit and where we stand and how this is going to affect us, we still have some responsibility in being prepared.
That's right. And not to mention, we're talking about the election is less than 8 months away. Less than 8 months away. And so there's a lot of getting ready we need to do to be prepared. And before you know it, it's going to slip up on us. Months away. Now, there was an article that Marion Wright Elderman wrote in the Huffington Post called the American promise, the right to vote. In it, she quotes President Lyndon Johnson's American promise that he said in March of 1965. And it says, every American citizen must have an equal right to vote. There is no reason which can excuse the denial of that right. There is no duty which weighs more heavily on us than that duty we have to ensure that right. The command of the Constitution is plain. There is no moral issue. It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country. There is no issue of states' rights or national rights. There is only the struggle for human rights. She goes on to say in the article that the courts and state legislators are taking a second look at some of these changes as the presidential primary process continues and the 2012 elections grow closer. And so the time to take action against new voter suppression laws is right now. As Representative John Lewis prepared to participate in the Selma to Montgomery march, he said, 47 years ago, I spilled a little blood on that bridge, but that was nothing to compare to those who died, so that we could live in a better America. We march today for what we did 47 years ago, for what is fair, what is right, or for what is just. The sacrifices made during the civil rights movement must not be undermined today. The command of the Constitution is still plain, and denying Americans the right to vote is still deadly wrong. Do you know the voting policies in your own state? Educate yourself and join others to speak out and defeat threats to voting rights now. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I also want to take a moment to talk about a we're getting ready for our second annual Hunger Free Summer program. Now, of course, this is where we take a few weeks out of the summer and we feed primary A. In fact, we feed pre-K, primary 1 and 2, and then secondary education children over the summer. Not only do we feed them breakfast and lunch, we also give them training on fundamental skills in math and science and reading and writing. And we primarily focus on the little ones in reading, and we focus on the middle tier in mathematics and science, because those are the areas in which we're finding that they're having the most challenges are. And we're glad to report, after last year's programs, we've had several of our students come back and tell us they made the honor roll, they made a dramatic improvement on their scores in school. So we were so excited by hearing them witness to our efforts. And we're asking you to help out for this year. Now, there are three ways that you can help. Now, first, you can go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free to make a generous donation. The second way is you can also go out there to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free, and you can fill out the volunteer form. And we would love to have you out there. We need skills in math. We need skills in science. We need skills in reading, writing, computers, all of those things that you would do in life skills. If you have life skills, then we'd also welcome you to enjoy. And the third way that you can support us, and if you can't donate financially, if you can't donate by your time, I would encourage you to go out to our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com and click the like button. Let me tell you what that does. Now, what that does, that tells corporate donors that we have supporters out there of what we're doing, that you support our cause of feeding hungry children and educating them over the summer. By pressing that like button, we can show corporate sponsors that we have supporters. So I encourage you to go out there and to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com and look for the Facebook segment and then click the like button. Again, you got three ways. You can donate financially, you can donate your time, or you can click the like button so we can take it to our corporate donors and say, look at our support. So I want to encourage you to go out there and do that. Now, I want to shift the conversation a little bit and talk about the GOP presidential race. Now, many are saying Mitt Romney's delegate math is beginning to add up. In fact, here's what Politico had to say. Few had expected the Republican primary race at this stage to come down to math. Yet, that's exactly where the GOP's presidential contest remains right now. Mired in a daily back and forth about whether Mitt Romney's clear delegate lead can be overcome by two rivals vying to be the conservative alternative. Of course, we're talking about Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum. The reality of the situation, that they probably can't catch up. It is at a point that Romney's campaign has been drumming hard. A campaign advisor asserted that if it would take an act of God to reverse his trajectory. And it has the added benefit of being true, thanks to his organizational superiority and the map ahead, which concludes a series of primaries. Now, those are precisely the types of races in which Santorum has failed to score a win outside of the non-binding Missouri beauty contest primary. So, Jima, is Mitt Romney the presumptive nominee?
Is Mitt Romney the what?
Presumptive nominee. Is he ultimately going to be the nominee for the Republican Party?
You know what? I really can't answer that, because he definitely has a difficult message. to get across to the people in the South. It'll be interesting to see what happens come Tuesday in Alabama and Mississippi between the three of them and who comes out, not necessarily just who comes out first, but, you know, the second and the third person as well, because I think that second person, you know, somebody's going to have to decide who's going to get out. And right now, you know, Newt, as we all know, is in it to the bitter end. That's what he said. I trust him at his word. and I think, you know, Mitt, he's going to struggle. Although, you know, he did just pick up the endorsement today of Jeff Foxworthy, which is a big deal down that way. He has a lot of instrumental pull with people down south and on the Christian side, as well as just regular people. So that might be in Mitt's favor if a person such as Jeff Foxworthy deems him to be, you know, the right one. So that might help Mitt down that way. So we'll see. I mean, I don't want to presume anything with this group because they are full of surprises. What I'm waiting on is for one to be determined so we can really get this primary season on and get this election, you know, cycle on. Because I'm ready for some of the commercials to come from the president.
Mm.
You know, I'm ready for
and to include his movie he got coming out.
Right, to include his movie. I mean, you know, as you can say what you want to about President Obama, but at the end of the day, he know how to fight. He might not fight like we fight, but he knows how to fight, and when he's in it to win. So
I
know he's ready, and, you know, I'm ready to see what it's going to look like. Because their stuff is going to be what it always is. It's going to be racial. They're going to paint them as some extremists, and they're going to want to make up stuff about policy. But, you know, at the end of the day, all they're really going to be talking about is his personality. Because they can't really attack him too much on policy because he's done a lot of what he said he was going to do. So, you know, I'm just really ready for a new circus to come to town.
Now, you know, speaking of personalities, now, we all know Mitt Romney's math looked good, but his chemistry sucks.
Yes.
I mean, did you hear his grits comment?
Yes.
What is going
on? Really,
and
we don't call them cheesy grits. It's cheese grits. And who really walks around talking about y'all all day? I mean, you know, he just was making up stuff,
fake,
you know, and
fake,
I'm from the
fake.
Country. I'm from the South, you know, and even when I go down south, I'm not, you know, trying to make myself make like I'm fit in. If you fit in, you fit in. You know, he just overreaches all the time because he just doesn't. He has an inability to just connect with people, just regular, everyday folk.
When you're rich, you're rich. It's hard to do that. I mean, and I don't understand why he has to kind of always try to fit in. I mean, he's rich, you're rich. I mean, he doesn't understand what people go through at that level. He should communicate that. Look, you know, I want to do my best to do A, B, and C. He doesn't have to fake like he understands. Because we know, I mean, it's easy to read a person like that, right? I mean, you come down to the hood and you talking about, like, you're talking and using that kind of language, you're going to be able to read you right away.
Right.
You know, so I don't understand what's his motive to trying to, if you will, fit in. What do you think his motive is?
Because his handlers are telling him, you know, you need to, you know, be more of the people. People don't see you as being a people person. People don't see you as being someone that they can relate to. So, you know, you need to change your language a little bit. But everywhere he goes, he changes his language. So it's everyone knows it's just a show for the time that he's in town, you know. And so that's the reason why it's not sticking past that moment, because the next place he goes, then he got to play like he likes whatever's there. I mean, so it's just, it's one thing to tout the accomplishments of a state or, you know, talk about what a state is known for. But every state you go to, you know, like he was in Tennessee talking about Davy Crockett. Really?
Who talks about Davy
Crockett? I mean, stuff like that. I mean, it's just so unnecessary, you know, and I'm making some changes while I'm down south, and this is an away game for me. I mean, you've already put yourself on the away team because you the one made the statement.
Oh, yeah.
That this is an away game for me. I mean, just go down there. We know you got money on top of money on top of money, but that's not the reason why we don't like you. We don't exactly. like you because you don't stand for anything.
Right,
we don't
right,
like
right.
you because we don't really know who you are.
Or better yet, he stands for both things.
Right, exactly. You know, it'd be different if, I mean, he's not the first person to run for president that's come from. I mean, George Bush family was rich.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right? George Bush came from a, you know, a spoon, a silver spoon in his mouth, but yet he was relatable in his own little way, bless his heart. I mean, so, you know, he's not the first presidential candidate to have, you know, that type of background. So why has he made it? I think probably because he's allowed himself to be defined by his money.
Yeah.
And everything
yeah, exactly.
he's done has been about
right,
that. And
right.
I think that's the difference. I
Which
think
means he don't have a personality. He doesn't have anything. He's empty, empty suit, truly an empty suit. That's what an empty suit looks
right.
like.
Right. Right. Correct. Correct. That's what Correct. That's what an empty suit looks like. Yes.
Okay. So I want to ask you this question. If Mitt Romney is not the guy, what's the alternative? I mean, you look at Santorum. What's the alternative?
No, Santorum is not an alternative. I mean, but he is an alternative for some because he can talk that language. He can make things real plain. But see, I think once he's vetted a little bit more, people will begin to see that he too is a little, you know, he walks on both sides of the fence. I mean, as we stated last week, a man that talked about college and education, and here he sat with three degrees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, college was good enough for him, but it's not good enough for me. Well, that doesn't sound quite right. You know, his language around single parents are breeding criminals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he makes language like that, like every woman that happens to be a single parent just was reckless and irresponsible in how she got pregnant. He doesn't make any distinction between the widow. He doesn't make any distinction between the woman that may have been married and now is divorced. He just lumps all single parent women in there together, or all single parents in there together with no distinction. And then to make the statement that they're just breeding criminals, like every person that's born or that's raised by a single parent is now going to become a criminal. Well, I'm offended by that because the latter part of my life, I was raised by a single parent, and I ain't never stepped foot in jail except to go to work.
Exactly.
So, I'm offended. You know, when he makes statements like that, and there's a lot of people that would be offended and are offended, and he stands on this self-righteousness, this righteous indignation, like he's above all the rest of us because of what he believes, and he's going to stand by your belief. That's fine, but when you are president of the United States of America, there are millions of people that do not believe what you believe, but you have to still run the country.
That's right. He has to govern.
And you
That's
cannot
right.
hold me at standby because I don't believe what you believe. You cannot disenfranchise me because I don't believe what you believe. You cannot discount me because I don't believe what you believe. So if you want to be president of the United States of America, you have your convictions. You have your beliefs. But you better recognize that if you're going to be successful in your plight to be president, then you're going to have to open up some doors and be a little bit more inclusive in your conversation. It's whenever you run something and you're a part of something, there's a lot that happened when I worked for certain agencies that I just totally disagreed with. I thought it was wrong, but I still had a job to do. When I was working with those families of the kids that was in my facilities, there was a lot of stuff parents was doing that I thought was just, are you serious? But I still had to, when that parent walked into my office, I had to open my office to them and make them feel welcome so I could try to reach out and help them. I couldn't treat them less than. And when Rick Santorum stands up and talks, he has a holier-than-thou tone and tenor when he speaks, and he comes off as though he's better than. And maybe it's just me, but that's how I feel when I hear him talk. And, you know, I can't listen to him talk for too long. I definitely can't listen to Mitt Romney talk for too long. Newt, because I just know he's going to say something eventually that's just so retarded that I just wait to hear it because I know it's coming.
Right,
you know,
right.
And Ron Paul, I'm not even sure what he's doing. I'm just, you know, he's just there. He's the uncle that just won't go to sleep.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk, 2 to listen. So, Jima, you know, we open up the show with game change, looking at Senator McCain's plight for the president of the United States after he picked Sarah Palin as his vice president running mate. And then we kind of watched it until to this dissension when President Obama won and became victorious for the presidency. And so now here we are, you know, 4 years later, same script, different day, with the Mitt Romney's campaign. Seems like it's in the same trajectory as the McCain's campaign. So I wonder if there would be a similar game change movie or documentary that shows Mitt Romney's 8, 10, 16-year plight to grab the presidency of the United States, and to take us behind the scenes of what goes on behind the Mitt Romney's campaign. Do you think we're going to see something like that in the years to come?
I'm positive we're going to see something like that, and I'm anxiously awaiting for it to happen because I would just love to know what they would say. But it probably would be real boring, though, because, I mean, Mitt has – it's not like he's that exciting of a candidate, but maybe it would just give us a greater insight into his psyche and how he thinks like he thinks, because I haven't figured that out yet either. But I really think, though, that I'm sure they're already working on it, you know, in terms of whoever that nominee is going to be. I'm sure, Game Change Part 2 is well in the works already. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, so, you know, Sarah Palin has kind of come out of that presidential campaign into this new person or new celebrity status. What do you think her place is now within the GOP?
Well, you know, I mean, she's on all the, well, I wouldn't say all the shows. She's just generally on Fox. So she's on Fox a lot talking about, you know, what her positions are, which some of them doesn't make any sense at all. I'm not even sure why they ask her for her opinion. She's only there because they keep placing her there and they don't have anybody else that's as colorful or that offers such great insight as she does. So,
and she had four years to get a political science degree. By now she should be up on her foreign affairs.
She should be, but I don't know that she is. She should be up on her domestic affairs first. How about that? How about you know what the Federal Reserve is and what it does?
Right,
you know, how
right.
about you know that, you know, what the president has done is as it relates to, you know, gas and our oil crisis, you know, has really not that much of a crisis. We're making it a crisis, or the speculators are. I mean, so she could have done a whole lot because she's not, I mean, what is she? She's not working because she's no longer the governor. So, you know, she could have, you know, several certificates in waiting in terms of, you know, if she really wanted to be taken as a serious candidate any time around. So I don't know that she does. She's made a lot of money. You have to give her credit for that. I mean, she definitely started something in terms of how to run for president and not really run, you know, with the Herman Cains of the world and that light, because, you know, I'm sure his speaking fees have gone up just a little bit since he was on the national stage. So, you know, you have to give her credit for that. She took full advantage of the situation. I can't knock her for that. She took full advantage of the situation.
Yeah, she has learned how to monetize running for office. And so I think Herman Cain has, you know, followed that model. Newt Gingrich will eventually follow that model.
Mm-hmm,
and, of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, all everybody that's in there, she did monetize it. So she was able mm-hmm. to show us how to take that social media into something. So, you know, although she didn't, she lost the campaign, but she won in so many other areas.
Oh, for sure. She definitely changed the game. That's for sure.
That is true.
She definitely changed the game, without a doubt.
Speaking of changing the game, I want to shift now to Peyton Manning. This was a shocker. I'm going to play something from Peyton Manning, and I want you to hear I'm going to call this his exit speech. And I think you'll find this exit speech to be quite interesting. But before we do that, we're going to take a break. And when we return, I'm going to play the tape, and I want you to respond. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jemma. And AskGema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I just want to remind everyone that I have a chat room open out here on Blog Talk Radio. And then, of course, I'll take your comments and your questions out there. You can also follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. And, of course, I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And if you're out there on Blog Talk Radio, click the follow button. And also, if you're on my blog, click the like button. We could really use your support. So as we move into our last segment today, I want to talk a little about Peyton's exit. It was, to me, very, very dramatic. I often tell people that today's, and this goes not just for sports, but corporate America as well. There's no loyalty like it used to be years ago. I mean, engineers come into organizations, they're there for 5 years, and they move to another company, and they're there. They kind of hop around. And then the same thing with corporations. They'll say, hey, you know, you got a project for 18 months. After that, we may let you go. And so there are no longer situations where people go into corporations and they stay for 25, 30 years, get a pension, get a nice gold watch, David Beck can sit back and go fishing for many years. Those models have changed. And likewise in sports, you know, a Peyton Manning is being let go by the Indianapolis Colts. It really shows us how the model is changing. And so that's why when LeBron James took it upon himself to go down to Miami, I applauded him because he understood that whole quote-unquote loyalty is gone. And so instead of him waiting for a team to get rid of him, and I hate to use that term, but that's the reality, instead of him waiting to get traded to somewhere he didn't want to go Because the reality is you don't have that option to pick your team in a lot of cases. He took advantage of it. LeBron James took advantage of it. So here we are. Peyton Manning, surely a Hall of Famer, is now being let go by a national football team. Who would have thought it? So I want to play for you his exit speech. And I want you to weigh in. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, 323-580-5712. Take a listen. So, as he was saying, nothing lasts forever. So, Jimmy, what do you think about that?
I didn't hear it, but I do remember listening to it earlier in the week. And he's right. Nothing does last forever. And I'm glad he's going out like he kind of wanted to go out. I'm sure he didn't want to leave Indiana. He's been there a while. He's done a lot for that community. I mean, it's rare that a quarterback can be somewhere 14 years anyway in this day and time. But he's been there, and I just hope he goes to a team that I like so that I can still cheer for him. excuse me, because I've always liked Peyton Manning. excuse me. He just seems to be a quarterback that was always prepared, even when they wasn't, you know, winning as they did toward the end. But... and I'm getting ready to sneeze, so excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. He was always a quarterback that the opposing team feared because they knew by himself he could beat you. They knew that.
Absolutely.
You know, I just hope he's really healthy and that when he comes, wherever he lands, I hope he lands in a system that will appreciate him and that will allow him to be the Peyton Manning that we've all come to love and hate at the same time.
So what do you think the best fit for Peyton Manning these days?
Wow, that's a tough one. I'm not sure. I'm not liking Denver. And that's because I don't like Denver. So, but it would probably be good for Tim Tebow to be under a Peyton Manning if you like Tim Tebow.
I mean, along those same lines, you look at Denver's running game, which is fully established. They really didn't have a long bomb threat or someone that commanded the team. So Denver does look good. Now, I have to say that. What about a Cowboy? What if he donned the star?
I mean, he donned the star and it's on and popping in Dallas. I mean, that would be just like heaven. I'd probably start singing or something if Peyton Manning was to come to Dallas. I mean, you can never underestimate Jerry Jones because he is all about winning. So
he can work a deal, can he?
Yeah, he'll get rid of 5-6 people if it's going to bring him Peyton Manning. You know, he don't really care who they are. So, and so you know that would be great if he came to Dallas.
So the issue though is once a superstar like that, you know, starts, you know, 14 years in, start getting at the end of his career, ends up on a team that, you know, that really doesn't have a program. And so, you know, although he has these great records and all of this stuff, he could potentially end on a team that doesn't have a good program and then doesn't have a good offensive line, doesn't have a good running game, doesn't have a good defense, and then all of a sudden could begin to spiral out of control because he can start getting hit more because of the protection. I mean, so he could potentially, if he goes to a team like that, he only has a year remaining.
Right, and that's why I don't think he will go to a team like that. And I think he's probably only going to do a year anyway because, I mean, that year will give him 15. So I think he's only going to do a year anyway. I mean, you know, his injury is a neck injury, and you know, it depends, you know, you could get hit, you know, so many kind of ways, and then it might have an impact. So I don't expect for him to stay around longer than a year or two anyway. And that second year would really be in a, I wouldn't say a backup, but really, you know, tutoring the person that the team has invested in for the future. So, you know, you're not going to build a team around a Peyton Manning because he's late in his career. But if you kind of already have some things clicking for you, you kind of already had a few things, you was just one thing away from making the playoffs or going further in the playoffs, you know, there's a couple of teams that fit that bill. So, it, you know, and a lot of them already have, you know, some quarterbacks. But, you know, I look at Jersey. I look at the Jets. You know, Mark Sanchez is good, but, you know, he would probably be greater
yeah.
if he had a Peyton Manning to teach him a few things. So you put Peyton Manning out there with the Jets, and, you know, that's building. You know, you even put him in St. Louis with the Rams. You know, a team that did go to the playoffs not this
year. Oh, yeah,
season,
yeah, that would be awesome.
You
yeah.
know, and you let Sam Bradford, you know, continue to grow under,
ooh,
you know, a Peyton Manning.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, I mean, so, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would be awesome.
There's possibility,
right,
you know,
right.
where he could go. And so, you know.
Okay, so what about the rumor RG3 going to Washington Redskins? How would that improve Washington? Or is it a good program for him?
I don't think he'll fit with Mike Shanahan.
That's what I was saying, too, man.
Yeah, I could be biased because I don't really like Mike Shanahan.
Man, he could potentially destroy that dude.
Right, he could destroy him and just like, you know, so he got to go somewhere where that coach understands what type of player he is and not try to make him be another type of player.
And he could be nurtured, right? I mean,
because right.
you need to nurture those
right.
young quarterbacks coming in because there's a lot of pressure coming on those
right.
quarterbacks. And let's be honest. I mean, let's be frank. That especially the African-American quarterbacks. They come in.
Oh,
I mean,
for sure.
You know, they're under an enormous amount of pressure to succeed.
Enormous.
Right. And so, you know, he's good. But the fact that he didn't play in a conference, that he got challenged every week. Now, he did get challenged. Don't get me wrong. But if he came out of a conference like the SEC where he was, you know, being hit, you know, coming out of the number one conference in the world, playing against Alabama, you know, or somebody, the national champions for the last couple of years, you know.
Not the last couple. Don't.
You know, SEC with the last.
Listen to me, though.
How
many teams in the SEC? Tell me how many teams in the SEC total.
Now?
Yes.
Oh, he got about 12.
Okay.
13,
and of that 12, how many are powerhouses every year?
All of them. I mean, any given time, you don't know. I mean, you got South Carolina, you got Auburn, you got Alabama, you got Florida. You're trying to tell me that
this season
that
he was not challenged in the Big 12. Yeah, I'm not going to let you get away with that. I'm just not going to let you get away with that.
I'm just saying a couple of times he was challenged, but I'm talking about every weekend and week out. He wasn't facing.
And every weekend and week out, Alabama was not challenged in the SEC. I'm not going to let you get away with that, Mr. Cook. I'm not going to let you get away with that.
I'm just saying.
And right now, you're sounding like the GOP.
Negative.
The deal is,
he's good. I'm just saying, for him to be really prepared to go to the NFL, I mean, I think, especially going to a Washington Redskins program, he would have been better served playing in the SEC a couple of years. You know, he would have been, you know, on
hey,
top of it.
Tell me this.
Yes.
Last season, who was the rookie of the year? What conference?
I understand Big 12.
On the offense and the defense come from for 2011?
I understand that. I'm just talking about championship.
I need you to say it, though.
I'm talking about program.
I
said it already. I said the Big 12.
Okay.
So I'm not discounting
okay.
them. I'm
okay.
just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about probabilities. I'm just talking numbers. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Big 12 has success.
I just wanted to make sure.
Big 12 has a lot of success.
I'm not sure. Because I'm not sure when the last time the SEC produced the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, but I'm just saying I know when we produce championships.
Right,
but you went from
college to NFL, and you're talking about, well, he's going to do an NFL, and I'm just saying, we 2011, the offensive rookie of the year and the defensive rookie of the year came from the Big 12. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying that he would have been better prepared, better served by playing in the SEC a few years just to get ready. And now he's going to Washington Redskins program, but I'm not sure he's going to be nurtured that well. I'm not sure how well he's going to be served in the NFL now. That's all I'm saying.
You sound like those people that claim the three cases out after 3 years is widespread voter fraud. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Anyway, I wish Robert Griffin III a lot of success. You know, I'm not sure by him going to a program like the Washington Redskins is going to better serve him. And I really don't know where Peyton Manning is going. I mean, it's really up in the air. But I can tell you this, when I look back at LeBron James' decision to go to Miami and his own free will and accord, by putting the deal together himself, by traveling around, it looks like it was the best decision for a national program, for a professional program that has been made since its inception.
I agree.
All right, that's our show for today. G-Man, what's your final comments?
I do have one final comment. I want to go back to the article that Marion Wright Elderman had written in the Huffington Post. And she gave a quote there from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the day of Bloody Sunday from March of 1965, where he says that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 gave Negroes some part of their rightful dignity, but without the vote, it was dignity without strength. And the confrontation of good and evil compressed in the tiny community of Selma generated the massive power to turn the whole nation to a new course. A president born in the South had the sensitivity to feel the will of the country, and in an address that would live in the history as one of the most passionate pleas for human rights ever made by a president of our nation, he pledged the might of the federal government to cast off the centuries-old blight. And so here we sit trying to figure out what can we do. And all of us are great in our own way. It doesn't take a march in your town. That's what it took then, and that's what Reverend Sharpton and them did this week, to remind us of how far we've come, but yet how far we have to go. And so as you begin to research in your home states around what those new voting rights ID laws are, find out what else is going to be on those ballots in your cities and in your counties. Find out about those people running for city council, because all politics is local, and we'll be surprised at what's happening in our local state legislative sessions that's really having the greatest impact, you know, on you being affected. And so what happens in Washington is one thing, but what happens in your state capital is what has a direct impact on you, especially as it relates to education and the amount of funding of funds they're cutting from education, schools that they're closing in our education systems. There's so many things we really need to get on top of. So I just challenge everybody, if you're on spring break this week and your kids are home or something, go to the library and you know, do some research. Find out what's going on in your home state so that you can be informed, because, you know, an informed people tend to make informed decisions.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. A special thank goes out to Mr. Motivator. And yes, I see you out there, Grammy. We love you. A shout out to Mary Hardy Hancock from the Cook household. William Patrick wants to say hi, and he's not scared of those two rulers. And of course, a special thank to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at Taylor Correction. That's at Ask Jima. That's AskJEMA. Now, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged. stay informed and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog. And that's at TaylorMade Talk Radio. That's TAILORMADE Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.